listener production. Hi, I'm Sasha Barbagat. Welcome to The Briefing. A study out today shows more than 70% of parents raising Gen Alpha, that's kids aged 14 and under, are trying to delay their children from getting on social media for as long as possible. But are they fighting a losing battle?
It's definitely a huge challenge for parents to navigate in terms of wanting their children to be a part of the world and current trends so that they can talk about it with their friends and not be left out or seen as too conservative, whatever it might be, that they're modern and they're up to date, but then also wanting to protect and shelter them.
Today, the coalition is expected to call for an enforced minimum age requirement for social media in a bid to keep kids away from TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook until they're older. A discussion about navigating the complicated pros and cons of socials in the second half of today's episode. But first, Antoinette Latouf is here with the headlines. It is Wednesday, April 24.
Thanks, Sasha. G'day, everyone. So Donald Trump has faced a New York court again overnight for day two of his criminal trial. So if you're wondering which court case this is, I get it. It's been hard to keep up. This is the first of his criminal trials where the former US president is accused of falsifying business records to buy the silence of porn star Stormy Daniels ahead of the 2016 election. So the focus of day two has been whether Trump breached a gag order, with prosecutors alleging he has. The gag order had been used to limit his public statements, which the judge previously described as threatening and inflammatory towards public servants. So Trump has spoken outside court, telling reporters his thoughts on the situation.
We have a gag order, which to me is totally unconstitutional. I'm not allowed to talk, but people are allowed to talk about me. So they can talk about me, they can say whatever they want, they can lie, but I'm not allowed to say anything. I just have to sit back.
Trump's lawyers have argued his social media posts have been in response to others criticizing him, and so they should be allowed. The judge, though, seemed unimpressed, telling Trump's lawyers he's, quote, losing all credibility with the court, end quote, before saying he'll reserve his decision on whether or not Trump has violated the gag order. Essentially, he's going to go and think about it before deciding. And this particular trial, Antoinette, as you said, there's a lot. There's a lot going on with Trump. This one's going to take about 6 to 8 weeks from start to finish, so we're only at the very, very beginning of it. The conflict in Gaza has entered its 200th day as the UN calls for an urgent probe into a mass grave discovered under a hospital. Palestinian authorities started exhuming bodies outside the Nasser hospital complex last week following the withdrawal of Israeli troops from Khan Yunis. So far, 310 bodies have been found, among them the elderly, women and the wounded, while some people reportedly had their hands tied.
We are horrified also by the destruction of Al-Nasser Medical Complex and Al-Shifa Medical Complex and the reports of the discovery of mass graves in and around facilities. And we call for independent, effective, transparent investigations into the deaths.
That was Volker Turk, the United Nations Human Rights Chief there. A spokesperson has said they felt they had to raise the alarm as a potentially serious breach of international humanitarian laws.
So the IDF has rejected the allegations of mass burials at the hospital, saying that it only exhumed corpses to try and find hostages taken by Hamas in October. And I guess that's the importance of having independent human rights investigators or independent journalists allowed in so that they can verify, so that you're not trying to piece together information, because one side says this happens, this atrocity happens, and the other side was like, nah, it wasn't us.
Yeah.
It comes as harrowing video of a baby being delivered from her dead mother's womb is doing the rounds on social media. So the newborn's entire family was killed in an Israeli airstrike. This comes as international concerns are growing about an impending ground offensive in the southern city of Rafah. So Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to press on with the planned offensive in Rafah. And so that's a town on the border with Egypt, where most of Gaza's 2.4 million population is now sheltering. And the Sun newspaper published satellite images showing Israel gearing up its troops and military trucks for a 6-week assault. The death toll so far, at least 34,000 Palestinians have been killed, more than 77,000 wounded in Israeli attacks. That's since October 7. And the death toll in Israel from Hamas's October 7 attack stands at just over 1,100, with dozens still held captive in Gaza.
The coalition is set to call for young children to be banned from social media and for platforms to be forced to carry out compulsory age verification on users. ASIO boss Mike Burgess and Federal Police Chief Rhys Kershaw will today make a speech at the National Press Club vowing to protect children and other vulnerable people from, quote, being bewitched online by a cauldron of extremist poison. Wow. Both will call on platforms like X and Facebook to do better.
At the same time, X's boss Elon Musk continues the public feud with PM Anthony Albanese over graphic footage showing the stabbing of a Western Sydney church leader that remains on the platform despite calls to remove it by the eSafety Commissioner. I'm pretty sure Albanese called him an arrogant billionaire, were they the words?
Mm-hmm.
A temporary order demanding X to hide the videos will be debated and potentially extended in court later this week, while the commissioner will also push for fines of up to $782,000 for each day the platform has not complied with.
Antoinette, what are your views on the whole issue of kids on social media? We do talk about it in our deep dive, but I'm really keen, you're the mother of young girls entering teenagehood.
So many views. It is so hard to keep them off it. So my daughters aren't allowed on gadgets or social media, and yet all their friends are. Mm. As young as eight, they have TikTok. So my kids will come home and they'll be doing this dance. I'm like, what's that? They're like, oh, my friends taught me this TikTok dance. And despite the fact that they know they're not allowed on, I did discover a few weeks ago that on the iPad at home, my daughter started a Snapchat account. Wow. I didn't even know you could do a Snapchat on an iPad.
Mm.
And the only way I found out was a family member had seen her profile. And so I was like, despite the fact that I'm really opposed to access to social media, especially when they're tweens, that she was able to get on there.
Mm.
So I would support any move to make it harder or to verify, because she is under the age of 13, make it harder to verify. You know, but one last thing in my little rant. Many of the parents are okay with their 8 and 9-year-olds being on there. So I fear that even if that happens, parents will go on and do what they do to verify their child being on there.
Mm.
So the government can only do so much, but I welcome something changing.
Yeah, well, and that's the topic, is these age verifications. There is a minimum age of 13, but there's no proof.
There's no enforcement.
You don't have to do proof to show, oh, yes, I'm 13 or over. So, yeah, again, an interesting chat coming up in the second half of this episode. Stay tuned. And in a significant move, 4 Indigenous spears are being returned to Botany Bay after spending 250 years in England following a ceremony overnight. The spears were among 40 that had been stolen by Captain Cook and were taken onto his ship, the Endeavour, in 1770 after he first made contact with the Gwayagal people. The Gwayagal spears were presented to Cambridge University's Trinity College a year later, so 1771, along with other items from Captain Cook's voyage. The spears will be returned to Australia and cared for at the University of Sydney until they can be showcased at a new visitor centre that's being built on country at Kurnell in southern Sydney.
Yeah, so this repatriation is particularly significant because it's the first items ever stolen by the British from First Nations people. Australia's High Commissioner to the UK has previously said authorities had worked over time to repatriate about 12,000 Indigenous items from Britain. There are at least 39,000 Indigenous artefacts in around 70 museums in the UK and in Ireland that remain.
Mm, yeah, really interesting story. And these descendants of the Gwayagal people have actually travelled to Cambridge University to retrieve them and bring them back home, which is, yeah, really cool to see.
And before we get into today's deep dive, we wanted to thank everyone who's reached out in the wake of our 3-part investigation into Australia's online medical certificate industry. So in our broadcast channel on Instagram, Behind the Briefing, we asked our listeners what they've taken away from the deep dive. And Susie told us it shows the Australian government isn't regulating our health system enough. At Spartan on Tour said it was really eye-opening. While listener Jess told us she'd learnt something new. Asynchronous, which she hadn't heard of before the series.
Yeah, neither had I. And we also put up a poll asking if you, our listeners, would still use online medical certificate services after listening to the 3-part series. 44% said no, 33% of you were still unsure, and 22% of you said yes. And if you haven't yet, be sure to check out those apps. They're amazing, put together by Bension Siebert and the Briefing's investigative team. All right, thanks, Antoinette. Now it's time for our deep dive into Gen Alpha and social media. made the call to take a break from social media? Maybe because you spend too much time scrolling, or constant exposure to grim news is getting you down, or you're finding yourself too caught up in the lives of people you barely know. As adults, we get to make that decision for ourselves, and whether we stick to it or not is purely on us. But how do you make that decision for someone else? That's the conundrum currently facing the parents of Generation Alpha, the first to be raised fully immersed in screens since birth. Mums and dads desperate to protect their kids from the dangers of the online world are struggling to decide when the right time is to allow children access to social media, or whether to allow it at all. New research shows more than 70% of parents are trying to put it off as long as possible, and more than half are worried about what their kids will see online. Joining me now to talk about it is Ashley Fell from McCrindle Research, which conducted the study. Ashley, thanks for being here. Your research has found a huge majority of mums and dads want to delay their children's entry into the world of Insta and TikTok and Snapchat. Is this a new trend you're seeing?
I mean, in some ways it is. I think we've got this new generation of parents coming through in the Gen Ys and even the older Gen Zs who have had this new exposure to social media that, say, older parents like Generation X haven't had. I think with that comes a greater awareness of the downsides, of the challenges, of the FOMO, which older generations can, you know, pass aside as, oh, this Gen Z slang term, but that comparison culture idea, I think, is a relatively new way of thinking. However, having said that, I feel like when we've surveyed parents over the last decade or so, there's always been this tension around technology in general and acknowledging that this new generation of children are being raised in the device land with screens. But I think the focus on social media, particularly now that we've had these platforms for a few years, we're having more critical conversations around the benefits, the challenges, and when the right time is to introduce that into a child's life.
What else has your research revealed in this space?
I think it's interesting around, I guess, this tension idea, where what we saw in this study is that parents do acknowledge that there are benefits of technology and social media. And I think for me, as someone who's often asked, you know, just give us a definitive answer. Is it good or bad? Is it yes or no? When do we start? And it's always so much more complex than that. And the word I like to use is the tension of it. And we saw that in this study, that parents were saying, well, a majority were saying that screens provide entertainment for their kids. It helps them to learn. It helps them to connect with others. But then on the inverse of that, an equal, if not more, proportion was saying that there were some concerns about developing an over-reliance on screens, this negative impact on their child's behaviour, and especially exposure to inappropriate content. So I think navigating that tension and acknowledging that two equally opposite statements can be true, like screens are good and they can have benefits, but there are also heaps of challenges, and that's the grey that parents are operating in. And I think the other aspect that I found fascinating was that many parents were saying that they find it challenging to manage their child's screen time. About 44% said that, but 53% said they find it challenging managing their own screen time.
Yeah.
So it's the idea that they're like, oh, we're trying to tell them, you know, do not what you see that
yes,
I'm doing.
Yes.
But they're saying they're kind of exhibiting this behavior. And I think that's also acknowledging the complexity of it is addictive and these devices are made to keep our attention. And how much is that an issue for parents, let alone for children whose brains aren't fully developed? And that's, I guess, the role of parents to have those boundaries, even while they admitted in this study that they themselves sometimes do spend too much time on these devices.
Yeah. And that's something that I've read a lot is about the modeling behavior is how, you know, I think of myself and how often I just reach for my phone, even when I'm watching TV or when I'm having a conversation with someone, which is awful. And then I imagine throwing kids into the mix. And if they're seeing that, then it's completely normalized. And with this particular study looking at social media, it's very similar. I mean, I'm on pretty much every social media platform there is, but the idea of having kids and exposing to them to the things that I see as a grown woman who doesn't want to see is terrifying to think of kids accessing that. And this crop of parents is the first to raise their kids completely immersed in screens. There wasn't, you know, half the childhood without, half the childhood with. It's completely immersed in it. What specific challenges are the parents facing in that dilemma of what do I do? Do I let them on or do I keep them from screens?
Yeah, I think there is this real tension, and we saw this even in another global study that I've looked up in the past, where it's parents were saying, we admit that we want to restrict screen time, but they also said in the same breath, we do use it as a reward. When kids are well behaved, they're like, well, you can have this time on the screen or whatever it is. So I think there is that complexity. I mean, there is some big challenges I think that parents are trying to navigate. I mean, screen addiction, like we just talked about there, where they are created for all of us to kind of spend as much time on them as possible. So there's screen addiction, there's impact on child's behaviour, there's that even up-aging trend that we have talked about a lot, which talks about, or is the idea that children are being exposed to content beyond their level of maturity, and so they become more mature at a younger age because of that exposure. And I guess so many parents in our studies that we've seen say that they want to protect that childhood innocence. But then there's also this competing idea that they know that their children in the future will grow up in worlds where they need to have an awareness of how screen-based devices work, because they are going to permeate the future of work and their jobs and education. And that's the other challenge that I've seen as well in talking to parents in focus groups and surveys, where they said, we try and restrict it, but then the school brings it in and it's on the device. They have to have the iPad or whatever, and homework is online, of course, and that makes so much sense. But they're also kind of fighting this battle and trying to discern that. And it's always hard as well because, you know, these kids have their friends who are online, and that FOMO idea, which again, I think when you're an adult, you can laugh at that. But when you're a teenager or a child, like what your friends think, what your peers think is of the utmost importance. So I think that is just the level of complexity in the operating environment that parents today are kind of dealing with regards to screens.
Yeah, it's full on. One thing I wanted to talk about with you that I understand you've kind of looked into a little bit is influencer culture and the impact that has on kids, especially young girls who see beauty influencers who, you know, do these intense skincare regimes. And we've seen young kids burning their face off with retinoids and all these things. What impacts are we seeing, you know, this influencer culture have on developing brains, on young kids?
Yeah, I think it's a really challenging trend and operating environment that we're in at the moment with regards to this outworking of that up-aging concept, where kids are literally applying products made for 30-year-old people at this young age. And I guess what we've seen, especially with Generation Alpha, who began being born in 2010, like you mentioned, haven't known a world without the iPad or Instagram. That was the same year they began being born. Those devices were released into the world. So all parents today, and even Gen Z, they remember a time often before these devices existed. Gen Alpha don't. And I think what we've seen in the last 2 years particularly is this trend of Generation Alpha influencers themselves kind of coming through. So, I mean, Northwest is a good example of that.
Yeah. But also Kim Kardashian's daughter,
where she's an alpha herself. And because the alphas began kind of turning 13 in the last couple of years, that means technically now they're allowed to be creating content. So I think they're looking up to older influencers, but they're also becoming influencers themselves on social media and these platforms like TikTok and Instagram and Snapchat, where they haven't really been allowed technically to be on until now, but we know that they've been influenced by the trends and watching and learning all the trending dances and practicing them. And now I think we're starting to hear more of their voice. So it's definitely something that we're seeing the rise of. And it's definitely a huge challenge for parents to navigate in terms of wanting their children to be a part of the world and current trends so that they can talk about it with their friends and not be left out or seen as too conservative, whatever it might be, that they're modern and they're up to date, but then also wanting to protect and shelter them and have that awareness. And yeah, I think we're seeing that in this study as well, where parents are saying we're trying to delay. We see the merit in delaying, but there's also tension around allowing their kids to have these devices so that they can feel included and informed and aware of what's going on in the world around them. And in this case, in the area of skin beauty trends.
Yeah, I know. Hey, look, parents fighting a losing battle, trying to keep their kids off social media. Like, I guess, is there expectation that we might see this growing trend of parents actually just saying, no, not until you're 18? I remember, you know, there were certain rules for me when I was growing up that was, well, when you're in tattoos, for example, and I know this is a bit different, but the idea that when you're 18, you make that decision for yourself, you're an adult, you can decide to go on social media, you can decide to go on Instagram. Are we expected to see any sort of growing trend of parents making that call and saying, not until you're an adult can you go on and, you know, do what you want on social media?
Yeah, I think we are seeing an increase in the proportion of parents who are kind of putting their foot down, again, because we're talking about this generation of parents who've been exposed to the real negative sides of social media. And we're now, we've got a generation of parents we saw in this study as well, who are more informed than ever before, who are themselves turning to social media for parenting trends and insights. And with that amazing level of access to information, I think also comes a greater awareness of the really scary stories where children have been taken advantage of by, you know, predators online or whatever it might be. And so I think we will see parents and more research coming out saying delay as long as possible. But the inevitability of screens, I think, is also coming into that conversation where they're saying we can try and delay it as long as possible, pushing that back into the teenage years when they do get that device or they do get that social media account. But this screen-based world is going to be a characteristic of this generation's future. And so, yeah, I think resistance is not futile. That's my advice. And we've, like Mark McCrinnell and I have written a book about Generation Alpha. And I remember with that book, we had a chapter all about screens. It was called The Great Screen Age. And I felt like it was just a debate between the positives and the negatives of social media and screens. And in that, we kind of gave some advice around this DCBA approach. And that's kind of D at the start was for delay and limit. I think there is merit and there is a responsibility on parents to do that in admittedly a really tough context, but I think it is our responsibility as the adults who know the downsides, who know the negative impacts, to try and delay and keep and preserve that innocence, while also the C part of that is communicating values, the B is behavioral strategies, and the A is accountability. So resistance isn't futile, I don't think. I think if you can delay, that's a great thing. We've seen in some research and some insights, but again, admittedly, the world around us is making that more difficult than ever. So for any parents listening who are challenged by that, I think this study shows, you know, and we want to empathise with that challenge that they're facing.
I can't think of a similar situation we've seen in history where we've had this generation coming up and it's been, like you said, such a conundrum. The tension there exists. There's good and there's bad. And it feels like the good outweighs the bad sometimes. But when you read those horror stories, it's so hard to ignore. Ashley, thanks for sharing this research with us and for talking to us today.
My pleasure.
That was Ashley Fell, social researcher and director of advisory at McCrindle Research. That is all for this episode of The Briefing. Thanks so much for listening. Before you go, though, we'd love it if you could share this ep with someone you think might enjoy it. And if you want to keep up with our other content, you can check us out on Instagram at The Briefing Podcast and watch full episodes on YouTube. Search Listener Newsroom. I'm Sasha Barber-Gatt. See you next time. Listener.